First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
So, I want to use this segment to maybe recalibrate some expectations for the Cheeseheads, the Green Bay Packers. And this comes in light of the agreement that has been reached between Jordan Love and the Packers on a one-year contract extension worth up to $22.5 million, $13.5 million of which will be guaranteed. Belmer and I were talking a little bit about this in show prep. There was a fifth year. Today was like the fifth year option deadline, I believe, for all those 2020 first rounders, one of whom was Jordan Love. And they got this extension done. So I'm assuming this takes the place of the fifth year option year. And so regardless, it looks like Jordan Love is set to become the Green Bay Packers quarterback for 23 and 24. So it should have at least a two-year shelf life. And the big thing that I am happy about here is, unlike Trey Lance, and it's interesting how these two guys are really kind of becoming tied together, because they're both these massive mystery men at the most important position who were drafted in the first round. Now, Love wasn't traded up for the way Lance was, but there's probably a group of Packer fans that think, yeah, Jordan Love's our guy. This is going to be Aaron Rodgers, who sat 3 years behind Brett Favre. It's going to be the same thing. And there's probably some Packer fans that think, this guy was a stiff in college. Like, we took him in the first round. Like, we're just wasting time with all the time that we have him as our quarterback. And I think that the biggest thing is we're finally going to get to see Jordan Love play. Like, let's see what he's got. And as it pertains, that's when I say recalibrate expectations, I think now we have a little bit too much of an expectation that the Packers are rebuilding. Because they're not. Okay. I'll be the first one to really admire the culture, there's that word again, that Dan Campbell has built in Detroit and the progress that they have made under his watch. But has the Lions' love in the NFC North maybe gone a little too far? Because it does feel like everyone is going to pick the Detroit Lions to win this division. Because what do we all say about the other teams? Well, Minnesota won a bunch of one-score games last year. They were, I believe, an 11-0 in one-score games. That's not sustainable. Their defense is still terrible. The Vikings will regress and be 500, or they can't be exactly 500 now, but they'll be an 8-9, 9-8 type team. Chicago is still rebuilding, and they're looking better, but they're not quite there yet. Probably a 7 or 8 win season for Chicago, something like that. And as long as Justin Fields continues to show progress and indicate that maybe he's their guy in the Windy City, then they'll be happy with 7 or 8 wins, if that's what it ends up being. And then there's Green Bay, who I feel like maybe gets written off because Aaron Rodgers isn't there anymore. And so we, again, feel like the linear, we always like linear trajectories, right? Where you see the Lions go from a cellar dweller in Campbell's first year to nearly a wild card in Campbell's second year. And you say, all right, I can pick up what they're putting down in the Motor City. They're going to win the NFC North, because you just expect that linear trajectory to continue. And I'm not saying that it won't with the Lions, but what I am saying is the current version of the Packers with Jordan Love isn't that bad. And let's not forget that Aaron Rodgers, by Aaron Rodgers' standards, was not very good last year. In 2022, Aaron Rodgers threw for 3,695 yards, 26 touchdowns to 12 interceptions, and completed 64.6% of his passes. That's a guy who was a two-time back-to-back defending MVP prior to that. But fell off enough to where the inevitable divorce between the Packers and Rodgers rightfully took place this offseason. Because the Packers probably look at this and say, hey, you know what? Let's forget about the personalities of these two guys. On the field, we can like they must feel good about putting Jordan Love in and getting a similar kind of season that Aaron Rodgers had in 2022. Which was a year in which the Packers still went 8-9 and were hosting a Sunday night football game against those Motor City Kitties with a chance to win and get into the playoffs in 2022 as the NFC's last wild card. Again, it's my way of saying that, you know what, Aaron Rodgers wasn't very good last year and the NFC wasn't very good last year. I don't think the NFC has improved that much, and I don't know that the quarterback play from Jordan Love in 2023 will be that much of a drop-off, if at all, from what Aaron Rodgers was in 2022. And the, you know, that sounds crazy because of the two names, right? Jordan Love is this big mystery man, and Aaron Rodgers is a future Hall of Famer. But could Jordan Love give you what Aaron Rodgers gave you last year? I think it's within the range of outcomes. That's a wide range because we just don't know what this guy is. But the Packers are probably hoping that he can give you that. And then you're hoping that guys like Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs with another year in the program can get better. You drafted Lucas Van Ness in the first round to help your pass rush. So you're hoping that you can obviously get after opposing quarterbacks. You already have Jaire Alexander, one of the better corners. So you're hoping that your defense, which has, you've spent a lot of draft capital, Jaire Alexander and Lucas Van Ness, a couple of those first rounders that you have spent in recent drafts, and there are some good young players on that Packers defense. So can your defense at least be the same? Can your skill guys get a little bit better? And can your quarterback be what your quarterback last year gave you, which ultimately manifested in a season in which you had a home play-in game essentially get in the playoffs? Can all of that happen for the Packers? I don't think it's that crazy. So, no, the Packers are not rebuilding. And yes, it's possible that Jordan Love makes the playoffs in 2023. That might say more about the NFC because, what's it, Philly, San Fran, Dallas. And then you start seeing people say the Lions. And that's my point. I don't have anything wrong with the Lions. They are fun. Dan Campbell seems like an awesome guy. And maybe they will win this division. But maybe slow your roll before coordinating them as the NFC North champs. This division's wide open as far as I'm concerned. I mean, could the Bears go worse to first? Unlikely, but if Fields takes that leap the way Trevor Lawrence took last year for Jacksonville when they went worst to first in the AFC South, a world exists in which that happens. So let's not overlook the team that almost got in the playoffs last year that, you know what? I know the quarterback's not there anymore, but they got a lot of that roster coming back. Are they going to miss Alan Lazard that much? I mean, you know, that's where things are with the Packers. I just think that they could still end up 9 wins maybe if the rest of their roster improves. And, hey, you know what? I think we've already said this the last few seasons because, myself included, a lot of people thought that the Packers were going to regress as Aaron Rodgers regressed. And they did a little bit last year, obviously not making the playoffs. But maybe Matt LaFleur had something to do with Aaron Rodgers winning back-to-back MVPs. Maybe Matt LaFleur, the coach who's still there, had something to do with making the NFC Championship in back-to-back years in 2019 and 2020. They lost to San Francisco and Tampa in those two games, but they were in the NFC Championship. And I'm saying, outside of Aaron Rodgers, the roster isn't that much different. So I think if I'm Jordan Love, I'm saying, let's go, boys. I'm your guy now. Come get on my back and let's go to the playoffs. Should the expectation in America's Dairyland be anything short of that? Because, again, they were so close to that point last year. So I know Jordan Love has been 3 years removed from, you know, playing regular football when he was in college as a starter. But I just think that sometimes when time passes and we don't see these guys play, we default to thinking that they're bad. Otherwise, they would have played. And if you're the Packers, why would you have moved off Aaron Rodgers any sooner than this? Are you really going to move off of the MVP? Which he won two of the 3 years that Love sat. And then he had one bad season, and now they're moving on. Like, the timeline kind of makes sense for me. It all lines up. So let's see what Love's got. And if he's got, you know, a B-plus level, B-level kind of season, even that might be good enough for the Packers to be a playoff team. Again, they're not rebuilding. They're just moving on from a quarterback who we all knew they were going to move on from. So we're going to get into some other quarterback situations, but I think Jordan Love is actually stepping into one of the more stable ones in terms of your new starters for 2023. We'll take a timeout. As I said, some other quarterback situations to discuss around the league now that the draft is behind us. Dennis Bernstein from the Fourth Period to go around the National Hockey League joins in about 15, 20 minutes. First thing in sports, Sports Map Radio.
We're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
Well, I'm sure James Harden had this feeling last night as we want to shout out our friends at Chicken Dinner Casino. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. They hear that a lot at chickendinnercasino.com because they have so many winners. That's because they have so many ways to win, including slots, blackjack, poker, and more. Of course, you can step into the sports book and bet on any sport. And now is the perfect time to play with the NBA playoffs going on, Major League Baseball in full force, and the PGA's biggest tournaments, including the PGA Championship, coming up. And right now, listeners of Sports Map Radio and our show get a special welcome offer. Go to chickendinnercasino.com/sports and get a 50% first-time welcome bonus up to $1,000. That's right. Get a 50% welcome bonus up to $1,000 when you go to chickendinnercasino.com/sports. So what are you waiting for? Become a winner winner at Chicken Dinner Casino today. And remember to add the /sports for your special welcome offer. So, spent a lot of the last segment talking about Jordan Love and the future of the Packers, which I don't believe is all that bleak in the short term. Matter of fact, if you told me right now that the Packers would win the NFC North, I could say, yeah. Kind of makes sense. Been pretty good lately. So, let's talk about some of the other quarterback situations in the league that maybe are a little less clear. As you know, the nice thing about the Love thing is we are going to see him play football in 2023. And let's keep our fingers crossed that he's healthy the entire year. So I wanted to talk about some of the action or inaction surrounding draft week at the quarterback position and read some tea leaves here. First one, guy we've talked about a lot the last couple weeks, Trey Lance. He is still a San Francisco 49er. Little bit surprising to me. I thought that there was a possibility that a trade gets worked out. Now, one of the teams that we thought would be a potential suitor ended up the Tennessee Titans having Will Levis fall into their laps in the second round. But Trey Lance is still a San Francisco 49er. And now I think we enter a dead zone where, you know, maybe there's still some free agents that have waited it out and are ready to kind of sign and have a little bit of their summers before training camps. But I feel like the major roster moves, like a Trey Lance trade, usually those don't happen until July, August, when teams get in camps and either they have injuries or, you know, maybe they look at their quarterback room or whatever the position may be. Like I mentioned yesterday, remember when Khalil Mack just on Labor Day weekend in 2018 got traded from the Raiders to the Bears? Like, that's the kind of that was right before cut day as well in the NFL, where teams are like, okay, like, here's a position that after evaluating my roster and about to make my cuts, I could still make a move at, so let me try and acquire this player. So that's what I think we're heading towards with Trey Lance. I don't think that there's going to be a move anytime before training camps. I think that he will be a San Francisco 49er probably when training camps open. And my guess is that San Francisco maybe wants to play the long game because Brock Purdy and his elbow, they want to kind of make sure that if they do have to play Sam Darnold, it's only a couple games, and that they can go ahead and trade Lance, because if Purdy is to miss most of 2023, then you ought to play Lance if you're the 49ers. We've talked about Darnold only being a Band-Aid and not, stitches, let's say, for the Brock Purdy injury. So San Francisco probably waits and sees how things go with Brock Purdy, and they still have Trey Lance. And that's that. So I would not expect a lot of buzz on the Trey Lance front now, post-draft. Let's talk about some of the guys that did get drafted at quarterback. And we mentioned Tennessee. Well, we knew that even if Houston didn't trade for Trey Lance, that the AFC South was going to be very busy at quarterback. And sure enough, all three of these teams take quarterbacks high. C.J. Stroud to Houston, Anthony Richardson to Indianapolis, and Will Levis to Tennessee. I think it's a no-brainer that C.J. Stroud will start right away for Houston because, yes, they brought in Case Keenum, but I don't think C.J. Stroud is the type of quarterback that needs the seasoning that some of these guys get labeled as needing when they're coming out of college. I think we heard that a lot with Anthony Richardson and a little bit with Will Levis. And I'm saying, now that we know the landing spots, I would just let both guys spin it. And I would play Richardson and Levis week one. Those would be my two starting quarterbacks if I'm the Colts or the Titans. Because here's the deal. You're going to sit Anthony Richardson behind Gardner Minshew? Like, what's he really going to learn from Gardner Minshew? Mind you, Anthony Richardson, I think the fit is good for Indianapolis because their coach, Shane Steichen, can run a similar offense with Anthony Richardson that he ran with Jalen Hurts the last couple years in Philadelphia. So, why not hit the ground running and allow the kid to learn on the fly? I mean, you were just terrible last year. Where's the harm in seeing what he's got? And if you don't compete in 2023, well, that you're probably not expected to anyway. So I would let Richardson go. I would let Richardson play. Levis is a little more interesting because you could certainly argue that Tannehill, while we all have our opinions, I'm sure, about Tannehill at this point, he's came up pretty small in some playoff games. He would profile as a nice veteran mentor for a quarterback. And I think to some extent, people thought that that's what he was for Malik Willis last year. Turns out it doesn't look like Malik Willis can play in the NFL. Hence Tennessee's drafting of Levis. But clearly you have a plan for Will Levis. And if you still have Derrick Henry on the roster, and you want to almost allow him to learn while on the field and allow him to kind of manage games and still, you know, if we do see a heavy dose of Derrick Henry in the Tennessee offense in 2023, as we have all of Henry's career in Nashville, well, why can't Levis do that? And you mix in your shot plays, you mix in some chances down the field for Levis. So I don't think either one of those situations. This certainly isn't Jordan Love sitting behind Aaron Rodgers. And while there's more of an argument to be made for Levis to sit behind Tannehill than there is Richardson to sit by Minshew, I would let both of them, let them go, let them throw them to the wolves. In that division where we saw Jacksonville turn it around quickly, maybe you hit right away with one of these guys and you're in contention for a division title in 2023. Here is one that's a little more uncertain, and that's Hendon Hooker in Detroit. John Bellmer, you liked this fit, Hendon Hooker going to Detroit. Do we think it's a redshirt year, or is there a possibility here if the knee heals in ample time, maybe Detroit is a little bit of a disappointment? Could we? You think maybe Hooker shows up in November or December?
I don't think he does. I think he's probably a redshirt year. Yeah, because look what you got out of Jared Goff. I mean, even though you know he's not maybe your franchise guy, I mean, he put up a ton of yards and played really well. Their offense looked really good last year. Why not let him sit behind him?
And I think that the interesting thing here, too, is, and this was also why I advocated for Seattle to take a quarterback, even though I'm okay with them not taking a quarterback, is if Jared Goff, let's say they do win the division, and Jared Goff has a nice year. Obviously, Hendon Hooker, the age was brought up. Like, they're going to have to, he should play for them in 2024 because of that age concern that people had. But if they win the division in 2023 with Goff, there's going to be a team that wants Goff. And you're going to have a trade chip that is absolutely going to be something that you can use next offseason to fortify your roster. So if you're right, and it is a redshirt year for Hooker, I think that's fine. But I do think that a lot of it, do you think it depends on how they do? Like if they are a disappointing team?
Oh, sure.
Thanksgiving?
Yeah, absolutely.
December,
yeah.
He's
if
out
it's
there.
Not coming together offensively the way they want, why not give the rookie a shot? And let him go out there and see what he can do at the end of the season. I think there is a path.
If he's good with the knee.
Correct.
Right.
There is a path where I see that happening. I just think the smarter move is to redshirt him. Yeah.
And lastly, some of these teams weren't kidding when they said they were committed to their younger incumbents. And I'm talking about Atlanta. I'm talking about Washington and, to a lesser extent, Tampa Bay. Atlanta did not draft a quarterback. So they are going to try it with Desmond Ridder. Which I'm okay with, by the way, because Ridder was a third-round pick. If Washington wants to try it with Sam Howell, okay, fine. If you want to think that your mid-round quarterback isn't just a backup and you want to give him a season, that's fine. Look at what happened with Dak Prescott, who started as a rookie. Now, Tampa's a little bit more murky because they did sign Baker Mayfield, but they didn't bring anybody else in, and I would let Kyle Trask go. I think I know Baker Mayfield's no good in this league. Kyle Trask would be my guy if I'm the Bucs, but I'm not. I'm just somebody that yells into the microphone. We'll take a timeout, and we'll come back. Dennis Bernstein from the fourth period on the other side. We'll talk some Stanley Cup playoffs. New Jersey Devils, the last team into the second round. Recap the first round. Preview the second round next.
Back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, let's go out to the Progressive guest line as we figured a hockey guest would be a good one for today as the first round concluded last night with New Jersey's victory over New York. And the second round begins tonight with a pair of games in Toronto and in Dallas. And so we bring on Dennis Bernstein from the fourth period to talk about all things Stanley Cup playoffs. Dennis, good to have you aboard. How you doing?
Well, it's great being with you, Greg. I'm happy to talk the second round with you. Can't wait. Hopefully it's as drama-filled as the first.
Yeah, and so before we get to the second round, let's recap the first a little bit and start with that game last night. It sure felt like New Jersey's youth and energy and team speed took over that game last night. And I don't know, Dennis, I kind of look at the Devils and say, they might be around for a little bit. I like their core. What do you think?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You know, when you draft two first overall picks, into center position, at some point, Greg, you got to be good. Mm. And now maybe this is the great turnaround. I think over 40 point standing production. Yeah, they'll be around. They're certainly a live dog in the a matchup against the Carolina Hurricanes. But I think the biggest story was last night was the lack of whatever that was from the Rangers.
Yeah.
It was really, really disappointing, Greg. You load up, you bring in Tarasenko, you bring in, you know, Patrick Kane, but where was Artemi Panarin? He didn't score in the series. Because Zibanejad did nothing. Chris Kreider after the first couple of games. It was a pretty significant collapse, Greg, when you consider the Rangers lost four out of the last five games. They were up 2-0. They were in command in those two games. It was a stunning outcome, I think, more so for the way the Rangers lost and the way the Devils won.
No, I completely agree. I mean, I thought that this was a ready-made Ranger team to make a run at the Cup, you know, instead they're out in the first round. So I guess the lingering question there is, you know, it's an Original Six franchise, and the fans are obviously pretty boisterous in New York. What does this mean for Gerard Gallant?
I don't know. You expect to – look, maybe you don't expect to win the Cup, but you expect to get to the Stanley Cup final maybe. They have to review everything. They have to review their process because – I don't know, when you load up these guys and your best guys don't play well, they play well all season for the coach, so can you really point at the coach here? What could have he done differently? I'm not sure. They talk about in-game adjustments, Greg, and all that other nonsense. It's man-on-man. It's best player on best player. You're fighting for inches in the playoffs as opposed to feet in the regular season.
Yeah.
I don't know what coach would come in and do a better job with this team. Maybe it would have got him a little farther, but do I want to let this on Gallant? No, I want to blame it on the no-shows on star players that you expect a lot better from.
All right, last thing on the first round before we jump into the second round series. Just how did you see the choke job from Boston?
Yeah, you're up 3-1. You're going home. You lose two home games. You're up. You have third period leads in game six and game seven. You hold on to them. Here's the thing, Greg. These President Trophies teams, these best record regular season teams, they don't have adversity. They don't have adversity for months at a time, and then game one, you lose, and you've got adversity, and how did they react? Now, the one flaw with this team, as great as they were, Greg, they're a 37- and 36-year-old center, and both guys missed time because of injuries in the playoffs. That was my concern. That's what happened, and that's why part of the reason why Florida's moving on. But, yeah, if you're that good, you're up 3-1 against a team that struggled to get in the playoffs, you got to go win the series.
Yeah, what do you think is the future for Boston and obviously guys like Bergeron and Krejci who aren't getting any younger?
I think, you know what, as funny as it sounds, they might miss the playoffs next year because both those guys aren't coming back. So who's going to play at center? Who are you playing at center? You know, does Tyler Bertuzzi leave by a free agency? There's going to be challenges. I don't think either guy's coming back. I mean, Bergeron has a herniated disc in his back. Does he really want to go through the process of healing that and trying to work out to get ready for October? I don't think so. And Krejci was a one-shot deal. Bruce Cassidy left town. He didn't like Bruce. He came back for one shot. It's great, but it's this team. I credit Sweeney for going for it. I cannot see enough that he did the right thing. But like the Rangers, when you bounced out and won, I've had bigger concerns for Boston next season than I do for the Rangers.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. Let's go to another team in the Original Six, and that's the Toronto Maple Leafs. They finally get over the hump and get through the first round, and you could just tell the elation and the celebrations on the bench from Sheldon Keefe and in the GM suite from Kyle Dubas. I feel like they're going to lighten up now, and they're just going to be able to – the talent will take over for Toronto. I don't think it's that long of a series against Florida. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think – the key for Toronto is that they've had a few days off here.
Sure.
So that afterglow of finally winning a series for the first time in, 19 years, that's gone away. Now it's do the job, get down to business. They're a better team, pound for pound. Now, you know, look, they got a great job from Bobrovsky in that Florida game seven, but when you handicap the series, you have to pick the Leafs. Pound for pound, they're a better team. They have more star players. They're the more rested team. But if you beat Boston in seven, you can beat any team. And that's the thing, Greg.
Yeah.
You can go down a list of all eight teams. You can make a case, maybe not Seattle. The other seven, you can make a case for them getting to a Cup final, possibly winning it. So, yeah, Toronto deserves to be the favorite. And, Greg, it just might be their year.
It certainly looks like it might be. And, you know, another team that is certainly not in as much of a pressure-packed market, but a team that has – maybe not paid as many dues as Toronto, but the Carolina Hurricanes. We've seen them. 2019 got to the conference finals. They've won a few playoff series since. But now maybe things are lining up nicely for them. We talked about the Devils earlier. How do you see Carolina and New Jersey?
Carolina got a huge break by not playing the Rangers. Because there's a ton of people from New York that moved down to Cary, North Carolina, that every time the Rangers play in that building, half the crowd is Ranger fans. So they got a break there. And they're playing a similar type team. You know, the Devils, they have Jack Hughes, they have Nico Hischier, but they're more, a defensive-minded team. So I think you'll see low-scoring affairs. I would favor the Carolina Hurricanes in this one. Again, the Devils got over the hump. They're playing with house money, Greg. Whatever they do for the rest of the season, they had a huge turnaround. They beat their arch rivals in Game 7 in their own building. This is gravy for them. And because of that, I do like the edge, and I do think Carolina will go on because, again, it's not the offensively gifted team that maybe the Rangers were against them. It's a more defensive-minded team, so I do like Carolina. But I think, again, a long series between the two teams, between Carolina and the Devils.
Well, when you talk about defensive-minded teams, we got two of them squaring off in Game 1 of the Western Conference semifinals tonight in Dallas as the Dallas Stars host the Seattle Kraken. Jake Oettinger has obviously been outstanding, and a hot goalie can take you a long ways in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But, gosh, these Kraken, they were never backing down from the Colorado Avalanche. They've been road warriors. I don't know about this series. What do you think?
I think it can go six, but I have to pick that. Like, I had a bracket to start, and of course it's busted because I had Boston as winning the cup, but I had Dallas coming out of the West. I love Dallas. And look, great. Colorado wasn't the same team. So you can say, oh, yeah.
That's true. Yeah, no Landeskog all year. Yeah.
Yeah, no Landeskog. Nichushkin wasn't there. They didn't have Kadri left by free agency. It wasn't the same team. So, yeah, kudos to Seattle. They don't play that well at home, which is crazy. They haven't all season. I like Dallas. I like their size on defense. I like this scoring up front. Rupe Hintz has been a monster. But, you know, Jason Robertson's going to score. Jamie Benn's bounced back. And the guy who scored four goals in that playoff round, Tyler Seguin's been banged up for years with injuries. He's finally healthy. You mentioned Oettinger. I like this team to come out of the West. I think that it might be contentious for a while. I do think Dallas will go on winning six and then face the winner of the Pacific Division.
Yeah, and let's end there. I mean, gosh, I think every hockey fan should be licking its chops over how much entertainment we might get out of Vegas and Edmonton and the goal scoring. Different kinds of players, I feel like, in terms of the skill with Edmonton and a guy like Mark Stone who's just real gritty for Vegas. Who do you like in this series? Should be fun to watch.
Well, you know, so much has been said about the Oilers. Down the stretch, they were 9-0-1, and they played great, and they played a bit of defense. And guess what? They finished second. And who they finished second to? The Vegas Golden Knights. The Vegas Golden Knights are the most mentally tough team in this playoff, without question. And because Mark Stone came back, this team refused to lose down the stretch. They are big on the back line. Maybe Laurent Brossoit is a question mark in net because he did well in the first round, but he hasn't played a lot in the playoffs. But I like this team. But I will tell you this: if you're betting this, you're betting the overs on this series in every game, and you got to be playing the props on the power play. Now, I know. Look, Edmonton's not going to convert at 60% against Dallas. Dallas has a bigger defense. They have a better goaltender. It's not going to be that. But, you know, Dallas, Edmonton's going to score on the power play, but they're going to give up power play goals. Because people always look at the 9-for-16 in the first round against the Kings. They gave up 7 power play goals. High scoring games. A lot of people, I think the power plays are going to be very, very effective. So, but it should be the fun series. I like Vegas coming out of the series.
You know,
another the underdog. And substantial, but I do like Vegas.
Dennis, last one. When you talk about power plays, it just feels like in these Stanley Cup playoff games, special teams can be such huge momentum shifts, can't they?
Yeah, they can. If you capitalize on it, and more importantly, if you don't, like in the Rangers Devils game, they got some power plays early, couldn't capitalize. That was a big issue. So yeah, special teams and goaltending still decides it. The one thing about this league right now, when you look at all the goaltenders that are remaining, there's really not like the superstar. You know, there's not a Vasilevskiy, there's not a Shesterkin, there's not an Ullmark. So it's going to be interesting. But yes, the special teams will go a long, long way in determining who's going to get to the Cup final, and that's why you see teams like Toronto and Edmonton as the favorites right now to get to the final.
He's Dennis Bernstein from the Fourth Period. Always good to chat pucks with him. Dennis, enjoy the second round. Thank you for your time.
Always a pleasure talking to you, Greg. Thanks for the time on Sportsnet today.
All right. We will take one final timeout on this Tuesday afternoon, and we'll come back. And I'll do a little bit of my own whip around on the action tonight, both on the hardwood and on the ice. A pair of games in the NBA and a pair of games in the National Hockey League. First Name Sports, Sportsnet Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, let's pick up where we left off on the ice, and then we'll get to the the two games in the NBA. Pair of game ones tonight, beginning north of the border in Toronto as the Florida Panthers travel to Toronto to take on the Maple Leafs. I have to say, yesterday's story with the Florida Panthers has me all the way in on rooting for the Leafs here. I mean, it might be un-American to root for a Canadian team, but barring, if you haven't heard the story, the Panthers are restricting ticket access to only American residents, barring Canadian residents with billing addresses from Canada to buy tickets to go to their building for the games between the Panthers and the Leafs that are in Florida. It's just so corny, so lame. It's just a concession that their fans are horrible and they're afraid of an invasion by Toronto fans. So anytime teams like that try to take their little half measures to prevent the visiting fan invasion in their ballpark, I think, or their stadium or whatever, is pretty lame. So that's enough for me to root against the Florida Panthers. But on the ice, it does feel like, you know, are the Panthers just going to keep this going? I mean, on one hand, maybe they pull off this amazing upset of the Boston Bruins. Maybe they're reinvigorated. They say, why can't we keep it going? But on the other hand, maybe they're a little fat and happy, a little bit, you know, riding the wave and not focusing on Toronto and spending a little more time than you'd like to see guys spend on social media in the playoffs with everybody talking about their upset. So I just expect the Leafs to relax. Again, it is the biggest hockey market in the world. It had been nearly two decades since they won a playoff series. They have that monkey off their back. And yeah, they haven't won the Stanley Cup. But I just expect there to be a little bit more of a free-flowing nature with their game. And all of it will result in a Leafs team that will just be able to play well enough to where the advantage on paper also translates to a heavy advantage on the ice. I'll take Toronto in five in that one, and I think Toronto wins relatively comfortably tonight. Seattle and Dallas, Dennis seems to speak glowingly, and I get it, of Dallas. They probably be my pick to get out of the West as well because of how good Ottinger is, and it's not like they lack a punch up front. Like, it does feel like Dallas is a pretty well-rounded hockey team from the goal. I always want to build my team from the net out, right? Give me that, you know, mainstay in goal. Give me 3 to 4 real solid defensemen with a guy like Miro Heiskanen, who is their number one, you know, horse on the blue line. And then give me 3 lines that I feel confident about rolling. And I want my centers first, and then I'll add my wingers. And I feel like Dallas has mostly done that. And they're ready to make a big run at the Cup. Remember, this team went to the Stanley Cup Final 3 years ago in the bubble and lost to the Tampa Bay Lightning in 6 games. So there's still a lot of guys from that team. Jason Robertson, Dennis mentioned, is a star. But I don't know. There's just something about Seattle. I know it wasn't the same Colorado team, but they win so much on the road. They play these low-scoring games. They're comfortable playing a grinded-out 2-1 game. I can't count them out. Like, you didn't think they were going to get this far, and I think the difference with Seattle and Florida is that I think Boston really just choked down the stretch in that series, whereas I think Seattle really went out against Colorado and earned it. So if you told me one of these dogs was going to win, I would say Seattle has a better chance of upsetting, for the series, not just tonight, Seattle has a better chance of upsetting Dallas than Florida does upsetting Toronto. But I'd probably still pick Dallas in 7. I'll say it'll go the distance. On the hardwood tonight, we have a pair of games. The first one is at Madison Square Garden, Game 2, New York Knicks hosting the Miami Heat. And I think it'll be interesting to see, not just with New York and Miami, but tomorrow night with Philly and Joel Embiid, what these teams do with their superstars. Because I think the real debate is with Embiid and Butler. Like, with the Knicks, Julius Randle needs to be out there tonight. They're down 0-1. They do have 3 days, by the way. Game 3 in this series isn't until Saturday. But you go down 0-2, going to South Beach with the Heat crowd, having not seen their team since they pulled off that upset against the Bucks. Like, that's going to be a tough road to hoe. This is a must-win for the Knicks. So I think Randle needs to play. But in Jimmy Butler's case, you have this maniacal competitor, as I call him, who seemed to suffer an ankle sprain that didn't look great on Sunday. You still win the game. As we say in all of these series, if you're the visiting team in game one, you just want to split, and they've accomplished that bare minimum. But again, Jimmy Butler doesn't seem like the kind of guy that's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'll see you Saturday in South Beach. Like, I think Jimmy Butler's the kind of guy that wants to be out there. So will he play at all? And then if he plays, how do the Miami Heat kind of manage his minutes? Is there some kind of minutes restriction tonight? Do they take him out a little bit earlier than they normally would if they are behind and not try and put all their eggs into coming back and taking this game, having already won game one at MSG? So, and, you know, John Belmer, I'll ask you, like, is it a loser mentality to just say, like, if you're a Heat fan, yeah, you know what, Jimmy, take the game off, I'll see you Saturday. Is that loser mentality?
I don't know if it's loser mentality, if it's going to help you going forward in the series. You said the same thing or a similar thing about Joel Embiid earlier with the Sixers. You wouldn't mind seeing him take that day off because, you know, you have game one. But I don't know. I don't think it's a loser mentality, especially if it's going to help you.
Yeah.
Going forward.
Yeah, I think if it's lose the battle to win the war,
I agree.
I'm good with it.
Yeah.
And the last game tonight in San Francisco as the Los Angeles Lakers travel to the Bay Area. I think it's I-5 up there in California as they, not that they're driving, but they will take the short flight and square off with the Warriors. This could be the last time we see LeBron James and Steph Curry in a playoff series. And they both had outstanding careers, both headed to the Hall of Fame. And, you know, let's enjoy it. I mean, two all-time greats. It should be an awesome series. Both these teams, I think particularly down the stretch, like they ended their series strong, right? Golden State got down 2-0 against Sacramento, 1-4 out of 5. The Lakers were tied 1-1 against Phoenix, 1-3 out of 4, excuse me, Memphis. And then 1-3 out of 4 to close out that series in 6. So I think there was and the ways in which they won, right? Golden State winning by 20 in game 7. Whatever the margin was, it was a big margin that the Lakers won by to close out the Grizzlies. So it feels like both teams are trending in the right direction. The other problem with Golden State was they couldn't win on the road. Well, they did win games 5 and game 7 on the road against Sacramento. And the depth with the Lakers just seems to be a little bit more present. There seems to be a little bit more of an awareness of everybody's roles on the roster. It's a decent Laker team, and I didn't think we'd be saying that 3 months ago. The Warriors, looks like, again, if they figure out their road woes, and they did win twice on the road, then it's pretty much the same team that won the NBA championship last year. So this has the makings of a very good series, very competitive. And as I brought up yesterday, Adam Silver got his wish because no disrespect to Memphis and Sacramento, nice stories and all, particularly the Kings, but I'm sure he's licking his chops over Lakers-Warriors in every primetime window the next 2 weeks on the major networks. So should be a long series. I think I'd probably lean to the Warriors, kind of a cop-out just to say, well, Warriors are going to win because they're the Warriors. But I thought if there was a team that was going to get them, that the Kings had a chance because the Kings could just play free and no expectations, and it looked like they were going to do it. But the greatness of Curry really came into play there down the stretch in that Game 7. And now I just wonder, like, in a long series, who holds up better? Anthony Davis and LeBron James or Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green? Like, I kind of lean towards the Warriors being a little bit more equipped to handle a lengthy playoff series. So it all starts tonight, though, and it should be a really fun series to watch. We'll be back tomorrow to recap those games, preview the Wednesday playoff action, maybe do a little bit of baseball as, another injury for the Astros last night. And their pitching staff continues to be riddled with some injuries. Bryce Harper is back tonight in the lineup for the Phillies. So see how he looks. A very quick recovery from Harper with that Tommy John procedure that he had done in the offseason. But as I said, that's all for tomorrow. That'll wrap things up for today's show. Sports Kings is up on the other side with Mean Gene. Again, I'm back tomorrow from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 to 3 p.m. Central. Thanks to John Belmer for producing our show and Dennis Bernstein from the Fourth Period for joining for the guest hit. My name is Greg Frank, signing off. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your Tuesdays. We're back tomorrow to get you over the hump. This is First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.